You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll hear about growing debt from rents, mortgages, credit cards, and other costs, and what effects that might have.
The Bay Area has lower caseloads because we made decisions to shut down early. Right now, we're asking workers to hold all that burden themselves. We're asking tenants to hold that burden. And it's a burden we have to share across society, I think, in this moment. And that's why I think it is really important to talk about things like canceling rent right now, canceling mortgage payments, canceling some other kinds of debt.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. The coronavirus pandemic has cost millions their jobs, and that means many tenants haven't been able to pay rent. Landlords have had trouble making mortgage payments, and other bills are also stacking up. It's not clear exactly how big Californians' debt burden has become, but one UC Berkeley study estimated that the rents owed by California households in essential industries add up to nearly $4 billion a month. I talked with Sarah Sherburn-Zimmer, director of the Housing Rights Committee in San Francisco, and Katrina Logan, director of the Economic Advancement Program at Community Legal Services of East Palo Alto, about who will bear this growing debt burden and what impacts that will have. So the big issue that I've heard raised recently is that after eviction moratoriums at the state and local level expire, tenants will still owe rent, and many tenants are already seeing the debt stack up with several months unpaid. And if they're not able to pay their rent, it's likely people are also having to face really difficult choices about which other bills to pay. If they have a car loan or health debt, I imagine those are stacking up right now, too. Some people are having to choose between paying rent and paying for food. And then there's small landlords who have mortgages or depend on their rent for income who are also in trouble. I'd like to start by giving both of you an opportunity to talk about what concerns renters and other clients have been bringing to you. Sarah, do you want to start?
Yeah. The majority of people we work with are already rent burdened. They already pay too much of their income in rent. And so we're in a situation where any cut to income makes it really hard to pay not only rent, but really basic necessities. So when people can't pay rent, they're not going to be able to come up with this money in 3, 4, or 5 months, especially the whole amount that when you haven't been paying rent 2, 3, 4 months. But we also see folks who are working some making horrible health choices because they are so scared about not making rent. They would rather, even if they have health problems, go to work in a situation where they're in danger than definitely lose their apartment or get evicted in a few months when this is over. And so the burden is, even though San Francisco has really good temporary protections against evictions, much stronger than many of our partners, except for maybe Oakland, that it's an impending disaster. Like, people have some protections now, but some people aren't willing to take them now because they know what that could mean down the line. And they're so terrified about losing the housing.
Yeah. Katrina, what are you hearing?
You know, I think it's just along the similar lines. You know, a lot of our clients, since shelter in place started, have reached out to us because they just have questions about, you know, I was laid off, I stopped getting paid, you know, I'm furloughed. What does that mean? Am I eligible for unemployment? A lot of our clients are undocumented, and so they're just looking for other sources of income because they're not eligible for most benefits. And yeah, I mean, you know, besides rent, obviously a lot of bills are not getting paid. I think folks, you know, at least in the Bay Area, I mean, they can't live here without having a car. So yeah, rent is probably their number one priority. With the moratorium, it certainly helps to maybe put it off for, you know, later, but there's other things that are also due, and it's kind of unclear what will happen, even with, you know, utility shutoff moratorium and sort of other pauses that have been put into play and hopefully are protecting people while they're out of work. But yeah, there's just a lot of unknowns as to, you know, what's going to happen in 3 months, let alone 6 months. The hard truth is that a lot of our clients are also working in the service industries, primarily the food service industry. And, you know, that just means that there's even going to be a longer runway for them to get back into work. And even then, you know, a lot of restaurants aren't really sure how long they can stay open, and they can't hire back everybody because, you know, nobody's going out to eat yet. And who knows what that's going to look like even when shelter in place is lifted. So, yeah, it's been really tough. A lot of desperation, a lot of worried folks.
Yeah, I get the sense that there's sort of pressure to reopen the economy so that people can get back to work and have income coming back in again. But I've heard this raised now just a couple of times. We're seeing just the costs stack up. I mean, you say it's unclear what's going to happen, but it seems to me like one thing is clear, which is that people are not going to be able to just not pay these payments that they owe, right? I mean, are we just facing like an avalanche of debt when the shelter in place orders lift?
I think the answer is yes. I mean, I don't think there's any way to escape that reality. I know that at least in, I think, Alameda County, or maybe it's just the city of Oakland, they've moved towards sort of converting rent debt during the pandemic into civil debt. And I'm not really sure whether that is going to happen anywhere else. But yeah, that's also not going to go away.
I think that's why we really need to look at unusual solutions in an unusual time, that the solutions that we usually use don't work right now. Like, we have a full shutdown of the economy, and if we just make the economically best decision, we could have mass death. And we're having to weigh that, and that shouldn't be something that individuals have to do all the weighing themselves. Like, the Bay Area has lower caseloads because we made decisions to shut down early. And we need to make sure that right now we're asking workers to hold all that burden themselves. We're asking tenants to hold that burden. And it's a burden we have to share across society, I think, in this moment. And that's why I think it is really important to talk about things like canceling rent right now, canceling mortgage payments, canceling some other kinds of debt, and that banks can absorb some of that, landlords will absorb some of that, but it can't just be on workers themselves, that we can't just look at solutions that the only people who are made whole are landlords, that we really need to look at solutions that actually buy us some time to take care of each other. And some banks are doing better at this than others when it comes to mortgage holders. Some are willing to tack it on at the end. Some are also doing the mounting debt that you come up with in 3 months. Otherwise, you know, you're in trouble. But we really need a bigger buffer. These are unusual times. We need to do special things.
I mean, some of the things that are being done seem a little bit like stopgap measures, but I do want to talk about them. For example, in most cases, tenants have to prove that their reason for non-payment, you know, even now, if they want to be protected from eviction, they just need to prove that the reason for not paying their rent is related to the coronavirus pandemic. Credit card companies, too, have relief options that are available for people who are impacted, but they, too, want you to say, well, you know, I have been affected by the coronavirus pandemic. I'm not exactly sure how directly people have to be affected in order to qualify for these kinds of relief. And you know, in the meantime, Time Magazine reported recently that the education department is still garnishing wages over student debt. How easy or difficult are people finding it to prove that it's because of the pandemic that they need relief? Have you heard anything from clients about that?
I mean, I think that it really depends on the type of employment that the client has. In our case, a lot of folks are either working under the table or working for someone on the table and getting on payroll. But because the shutdown happened so quickly, their employers were not even available to write them a letter, to provide them with sort of something in writing to say that they're furloughed or they're laid off. We have seen some employers sort of provide that information, but especially in cases where we have low-wage workers and folks who are undocumented, it's harder to get that proof. I mean, we encourage people to be creative, you know, showing a pay stub that was from prior to shelter in place and one that was from after, or showing their bank account statements, because obviously everyone's been affected, especially a lot of our clients who are looking to take advantage of their of the moratorium protections. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes back to the thing that the more bureaucratic hoops you make to prove things, the most vulnerable people are the people who can't get the relief they need.
Right.
And whether that is language access to understand how they're supposed to write the correct letter or what to do, or like we're seeing a lot of people move out of their apartments when really? They actually do have a whole set of protections right now. And it's many of the same things you were talking about, that the more hoops, San Francisco's law is a little easier. All in San Francisco, you just have to show that you lost income or had increased costs. But, and you can self-certify on that in your letter, but it's still a lot of hoops and you still have to do things on the right date at the right time. And that's a lot of burden for low-income tenants who have a lot of other things they need to figure out during this period of time, including how to stay well, how to stay fed.
So you're seeing people come to you who say, I'm not able to pay rent anymore, so I'm just going to leave?
Yes. Or people come to us afterwards and they're like, well, I'm breaking my lease and my landlord says I can't break my lease. And so we have to kind of back up where there's like, well, can you pay right now? What does that mean? Can we help you write a letter? You know?
Yeah.
We're hearing lots of stories, a lot of stories in when people have roommates, the roommate just like packed up and left. Not only leaving an apartment, maybe they could have stayed in if they understood their rights, but also people who don't know, like when you make all the hoops really hard, people then are at risk of being evicted because they didn't write the right letter at the right time or didn't have the right documentation from an employer that doesn't exist anymore.
Katrina, the program that you lead works with low-income workers and the immigrant and reentry population. You help fight wage theft and other issues. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about working conditions right now and vulnerabilities right now for low-wage workers who have suddenly been deemed essential. Has being deemed essential given them any additional safety in having an income?
I mean, I would hope so, but I don't think that's the case. I think that especially when, you know, you have someone who is a low-wage worker, even for a large company, you risk being laid off or being terminated for, you name it, any reason. I think that given the economy and sort of where the greatest need is, especially in grocery stores, grocery food chains, janitorial jobs and at hospitals, what we've heard, and we haven't heard a lot, but mostly because a lot of folks are not working, but what we've heard is that when someone might be worried about being exposed to COVID, either at their home, like let's say they're renting a room and they're afraid that a roommate might have COVID-19 and no one has any testing accessible to them, they're afraid that they might lose their job if they don't show up the next day to work, even if they might have been exposed in their homes. They don't know about any protections, you know, that their employment might provide, just in terms of, you know, if you can't make it in because of COVID-19, you know, here's what the new federal law is, here's what the new state law is in terms of getting disability and having that available to take the time and to take care of your family or yourself. So yeah, I think that being deemed an essential worker gives you some hope that you will probably have a job. But as far as the health and, you know, the public health concerns and the education around PPE and the education around testing accessibility, at least here in East Palo Alto, and ensuring that people you're living with are not not carrying the virus. I think there's just a lot of unknowns and a lot of lack of information about that, especially in our community. And I think that definitely needs to increase, you know, from the public health perspective and from, I think, employers who need workers, you know, need people to fill the jobs and to make sure that the shelves are stocked and make sure that the floors are clean. And, you know, they need the people to do that. And I think that everyone needs to do a better job of sort of educating workers on, you know, how they need to take care of themselves and their families.
I'm glad you brought up information, because CalMatters wrote recently that comprehensive public data on precisely how many Californians are missing rent payments does not exist. While one national landlord group estimates that May rent payments were surprisingly on track with rates from last year, the longer the shutdown, the more missed rent payments start piling up. And a UC Berkeley study found that rents owed by California households in essential industries total nearly $4 billion per month. What could we do with more comprehensive data on debt?
I mean, the hope is that we can come up with better policies to actually come up with creative solutions and better options for people who are working in essential industries and who are carrying this enormous burden of debt.
I'd say that additionally, there's a lot of basic planning we do because of lack of information that's collected in California. And whether that is real information about evictions, but also the number of vacant units. Cities like San Francisco don't record that at all. We don't record what rents are. There are some cities like Berkeley and Santa Monica who record what rents are across the board and how much they really go up. But there's almost no tracking. So when we talk about rent jumping, we don't take into factors what is actually happening. So it's hard to make policy when you don't have correct information. I would add this sort of this bigger piece is because of the way that landlords hide behind limited liability corporations, really tracking who the big players are and what they're doing is also really difficult with lack of real good information. And for one example of that, the biggest landlord in San Francisco, who has over 8,000 units, over 250 buildings, they got they hide between every building as a separate LLC. They are a front for a lot of really big international capital, and they just get a PPP loan from the federal government. And so, what low income tenants got, if they documented, if they're lucky, they got maybe the $1,200, which in San Francisco won't even pay your rent for a month. In most of our surrounding areas, rents are going up through the entire area throughout the state. But the biggest landlord got $3.6 million from the federal government and is giving no, and it wasn't attached to us any relief for tenants.
We'll get back to this conversation with Sarah Sherburn-Zimmer, Director of the Housing Rights Committee in San Francisco, and Katrina Logan, Director of the Economic Advancement Program at Community Legal Services of East Palo Alto, in just a moment. You've been listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press.
KSFP would like to thank the awesome, forward-thinking institutional supporters of the San Francisco Public Press, including the San Francisco Foundation, the James Irvine Foundation, the Reva and David Logan Foundation, Craig Newmark Philanthropies, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, the Fund for Nonprofit News at the Miami Foundation, the Fund for Investigative Journalism, the California Endowment, the Center for Cultural Innovation, the Institute for Nonprofit News, and the local independent online news publishers. This is KSFP LP San Francisco, 102.5 FM.
Let's hear more from Sarah Sherburn-Zimmer and Katrina Logan about the anticipated impacts of mounting debt. When we think about how much debt is accumulating for, you know, individuals, consumers, workers, who are these huge amounts of debt actually owed to? Because, you know, in some cases you may owe, you know, your rent to a small landlord who really is hurting for it. And on the other hand, you may owe, say, your mortgage to a big bank. Do either of you have a sense of who most of the debt will eventually be paid to?
What I would say is sort of similar to what happened in the last recession. A lot of debt might get sold to third-party debt collectors. And, you know, here in California, the debt collection industry is rife for abuse and rife for, you know, frauds and scams. Most of our tenants who maybe worked out a pay and stay or maybe worked out a deal, you know, they were unable to pay and then they leave. A lot of times they get letters from these debt collectors. They have no idea who they are, but they're claiming that they owe, you know, thousands more than what they thought that they originally owed to their landlord. And they have no idea who it is. And it's kind of interesting because Assembly Budget Subcommittee hearing on the proposed Department of Financial Protection and Innovation is actually going on right now to hopefully provide some protection and some regulation on the debt collection industry here in California. You know, one step, even just requiring debt collectors to have a license so you know who they are. You know, we've seen tons of cases where clients will just come in with these letters. They're like, I have no idea who this is. They're claiming that I owe them money. They're claiming that I'm going to, you know, go to jail or they're going to sue me for it. And I have no idea who this is. This happens all the time. And right now, sure, they might owe their rent. They know who their landlord is. But that landlord, you know, 3 to 6 months down the line can just go ahead and sell that debt to, you know, a third party debt collector and, you know, maybe get pennies on the dollar for it and just be done with it. And that's sort of the scary part about debt and sort of that collection industry. It could go on and just tons of people who are trying to get in the door and just, you know, try to collect money and take advantage of our system that is sort of broken just in terms of debt collection and the courts. And all of our courts in California are overwhelmed with debt collection cases all the time. There's still cases being filed today. So yeah, it's a big problem, I think, here in California.
And that we have a system that sets it up that much of our affordable housing you can't get into if you have certain kinds of debt.
Really? Can you say more about that?
Including a lot of HUD housing.
Yep.
And so you may lose your housing or even become homeless because of past debt and then not be able to qualify to move into affordable housing or public housing because you have debt.
That's correct. Yep.
Or to get help.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. It's different with, it's crazy because it's different with, you know, different affordable housing providers. Some have this like sort of debt limit, like you can't have more than, you know, $2,500 in debt, and they'll run a credit report. And if you have more than $2,500 in debt, they'll say, oh, we can't rent to you. I mean, and that has, you know, nothing to do with whether or not they have a job now and they can, you know, afford to pay the rent. I mean, it's another way of sort of keeping people out of housing and making it impossible for folks who are carrying debt to find housing.
Wait a second, $2,500 in debt, that's nothing. I mean, if you have health debt, if you have, I mean, now so many people in San Francisco, they owe many months of rent, that's easily going to be more than that. I'm shocked.
We had a homeless mother who had 4 kids who got the lottery to be able to move in a public housing unit in San Francisco. And she had leftover student loan debt that they were not going to let her move in.
Wow. Are there options for people who have that kind of debt? I mean, it sounds like the future holds debt for a lot of us. Is there anything that can be done?
As our president has shown us, you can just declare bankruptcy. Personal bankruptcy is an option for all Americans. You do have to be able to have some status here to file for bankruptcy, but it's not free, it's not easy, it's not accessible. You don't get your own attorney. I mean, the same thing goes for evictions, right? You're not always going to have an attorney to represent you. The process is not easy. You know, you'll have to figure it out on your own. I mean, all of these problems. That is an option, especially for people whose debt is just, overwhelming. There's no way that they're going to pay it back.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why we're really frustrated at most of the solutions we're seeing coming out of the state government right now. A combination of no real eviction protections from the state government. We're getting it city to city patchwork. And that's disgusting in this moment. As much as Newsom does pretty press releases, we actually need real protections for people in the short term. And we need real protections in the long term. And the fixes we're getting either are expensive bailouts to some landlords, but often are coupled with things that tenants need lawyers to be able to qualify for, to really be able to access. It has to already go into the eviction court. You have, and the assumption that you're going to have a defense in court means that no one's going to know you have that defense in court unless you have a lawyer. And so unless we do fixes that are go in automatically, go in for everyone, we're going to have this mounting crisis that the people who are going to hold the most burden are low-income families.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time here, but I wanted to give you both a chance to just kind of give any last thoughts about debt, and if there are resources available to people who are facing mounting debt, if you want to recommend anything, now is the time.
Well, I would just say that the FTC recently announced that everyone has free access to their credit reports every week now, especially during the pandemic. And so if folks are worried about what their credit report looks like, they can check it now and they can do it for free, www.annualcreditreport.com. And that is just one way of getting more information about yourself and what potential future landlords, future employers might see when they run your credit report. Better to at least be informed than to not know at all.
And for tenants, many things, writing a letter, being proactive, whether it's talking to your neighbors or writing the right letter, is key. And so the two resources I would give folks is, and if you live in San Francisco, sfadc.org. That's the San Francisco Anti-Displacement Coalition. And there's videos on how to fill out the letter. There's phone numbers of groups like ours at Housing Rights Committee. It's in six languages. To be proactive. And if you're at the state level and you don't know who to call, you can call Tenants Together, which is a statewide tenants rights group, which will connect you with your local tenants group or answer questions if you don't have a local law.
Great. Katrina and Sarah, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura.
That was Sarah Sherbin-Zimmer, Director of the Housing Rights Committee, and Katrina Logan, Director of the Economic Advancement Program at Community Legal Services of East Palo Alto. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic.
Civic is a production of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative news organization, sfpublicpress.org. Host and reporter, Laura Wenis. Producer and contributor, Mel Baker. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Additional themes from the Blue Dot Sessions. Civic airs Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. on KSFP LP, San Francisco, 102.5 FM. Thanks for listening.